Case number 13-5228, Trumpeter Swan Society et al. Appellants versus Environmental Protection Agency et al. Mr. Snape for the appellants, Ms. Newman for the appellees, Mr. Bell for the intervener.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is William Snape, counsel for the appellant petitioners, and also a practitioner in residence at the American University College of Law. I have reserved 1 minute for rebuttal. Your Honors, this is a straightforward statutory interpretation case about a 2012 petition to regulate toxic lead, a dangerous substance regulated by EPA in many other contexts under the Toxic Substances Control Act, or TSCA. The issue at hand is whether appellant's 2012 petition to regulate lead in ammunition can and should finally be substantively reviewed by the District Court de novo as the statute demands, thus ensuring, in TSCA's unique way, citizen access to the courts on petitions to initiate rulemaking under the statute. The agency has no discretion to deny the federal courts their congressionally mandated de novo review of these TSCA petitions or the meaning of the statute. This case also has nothing to do with the 2010 petition. Section 21 of TSCA envisions new petitions to initiate rulemaking on toxic substances when scientific or legal or other information is presented to the agency about unreasonable risks to human health or the environment.
What relief are you seeking? Is it remand to district court, remand to the agency, or legal ruling by this court?
This court has the power to rule on the merits, but it seems because there is some, the record issues with our petition, it our view is the most appropriate, if we were to prevail, would be to remand it back to the district court and actually have a hearing on the merits.
What are the record issues?
I'm sorry.
What are the record issues? Aren't we reviewing this de novo?
Well, you're right that it is de novo, Your Honor, and the underlying legal issue on the merits
is de novo.
Exactly.
Is there any factual development that could influence the way we think about the legal issue about the EPA's ability to regulate bullets?
That's exactly right, Your Honor.
And I didn't say it. I asked you a question.
I'm sorry. I didn't understand it, Your Honor.
Is there anything that could develop it before the agency that would affect how one would look at the legal issue?
Under the statute itself, every new petition gets a de novo review. So technically, you're right, or at least what you're implying is that the record issues aren't voluminous. But a part of the story of this case is that the 2012 petition is a direct result of the denial of the 2010 petition.
I understand that. I'm just asking, just following up on Judge Millett's question about why can't we just decide this?
You could, Your Honor.
Okay,
it's the bottom line.
There's no factual development. It's a straightforward legal question. The agency did say in its denial that even if this was a petition, it would have denied it for the same reason as the first petition, correct?
And that's correct, Your Honor.
Right. So I just need to understand your position. Is it your position that on the legal issue that the EPA can regulate bullets when they're sold separately from cartridges and bullets and shot separately? Or are you arguing that they can regulate bullets and shot even when sold in cartridges and shells? Which is your position?
The issue of the cartridges and shells and ammunition comes up because of the IRS reference.
Right. I'm asking you the question.
But the macro issue, Your Honor, before you even get to that question, is when Congress passed this statute, what they didn't want the agency to do was to regulate ammunition as toxic per se. There's legislative history, and the meaning of the statute itself indicates that that's what's in the ammunition.
Before you look at legislative history, can we just look at the statute?
Yes, sir.
The statute says EPA can't regulate anything that's taxed under 4181, right?
Correct.
And 4181 says shells and cartridges.
Correct. And shells and cartridges.
How can under what theory could legislative history of TSCA affect that outcome?
Because the shells and cartridges are per se not toxic. But what's in the shells and cartridges could very well be toxic. Your Honor, what if this was anthrax in the bullets?
So your position is that notwithstanding 4181, that shells and cartridges containing bullets and shot can be regulated.
The substances inside them can be, not ammunition as toxic per se.
Well, how would that work?
How would that work?
Yeah, give me an idea. How would they do that?
It would work because EPA would then have the power, and we believe already does have the power, to make sure that bullets like copper bullets already readily used today were sold in ammunition and cartridges. It would just be a matter of making sure the lead itself is not in these cartridges and shells.
Well, that's why I wanted to get back to clarify something. And is your position that there's nothing you would want to show or put on the record in district court that would help to illuminate your understanding of why, in your view, they're wrong in the reading of 4181 and that the bullets can be distinguished from the shells or cartridges? You have nothing you would want to put on in the district court that might influence that statutory interpretation?
No, we believe our 2012 petition speaks for itself, Your Honor, and has all the readily available information that is needed for the agency to make the determination or for a court to force the agency to make the determination.
So let me just probe a little bit further on that point about what regulation you envision the agency being able permissibly to engage in. They presumably couldn't regulate the sale of constructed cartridges and shells. Could they regulate the manufacturer and say no manufacturer would put lead into cartridges and shells?
Well, they could do that, but I'm not sure that would be the best idea. When you look at sections,
hunters have to go out and pick it up in the woods because by that time it's just the lead floating free. I mean, I just want to get a sense of what you actually think the regulation could permissibly look like.
Yes, Your Honor.
Given 4181.
You know, the thing about lead bullets is that we actually envision in the 2012 petition that police, the military, might still want to use lead bullets for reasons that are different than the reasons were before this court. And so the agency would have discretion or power to deal with that regulation under Section 6 of TSCA. But we are saying that the agency could and should limit the availability of lead ammunition and shells. In a way, you know, it could be geographic limitations. It could be temporal limitations. Section 6 of TSCA gives the agency a wide number of options to regulate lead. We're not asking for a ban.
Let's go back to the basic legal question, first of all. I'm looking here at the IRS's definition of 53.111. It defines shells and cartridges, including any article consisting of a projectile, explosive, and container that is designed, assembled, and ready for use. That's the definition of a cartridge in a cell that can't be taxed. So why doesn't that language make it quite clear that once you have a cartridge that has in it a, quote, projectile, explosive, and container, that cannot be taxed. Therefore, under TSCA, it can't be regulated.
The problem with that argument, Your Honor, in our view, yeah, is that it ignores the fundamental premise of the statute, which is that it's the substance. I mean, lead is in the periodic table. It is clearly a substance that the agency regulates. And therefore, we're not saying there will not be any projectiles. There'll be projectiles with other substances that are not toxic.
Well, but if someone's producing, if a company is making lead bullets, putting lead bullets, i.e. the projectile, into a cartridge, that can't be taxed. Do you agree with that?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, then explain to me, since that can't be taxed, how it can be regulated?
Well, because the substances in the actual cartridge can be. What Congress said was that ammunition and, I know I'm repeating myself, but ammunition and cartridges per se are not toxic. It was to preserve the right to shoot firearms and not have that deemed to be toxic because other things could happen. It had nothing to do, in our view, both on the plain language and what was said in the legislative history, about what's inside as a substance, those actual cartridges or shells. And again, the example, what if this was Ebola in a bullet? or anthrax in a bullet. I mean, it reaches a level of absurdity if the agency can't deal with what's actually in these projectiles. So it's the projectiles per se that are not regulated. It is not what is actually in them, particularly when there's so many readily available alternatives.
My understanding is that the injury is caused from your petition by spent bullets and shot. And to be spent, it necessarily has to be encased within a cartridge. Is that correct? And
that
so
is
it seems
correct,
to me that you're very, the very, I was curious about, first of all, I just take it there's either no issue of unspent bullets ending up in the environment somehow, falling out of someone's pocket or something like that, that it really, or is there something in the firing process that actually makes it more dangerous?
No, it has nothing, with lead, it has nothing to do with the actual firing process. It has to do with what happens when that lead bullet hits its target. Mm-hmm. And the lead disperses, the lead stays in the ecosystem. Other animals can eat it, like endangered California mm-hmm. condors. Even hunters have elevated levels of lead because of what happens when it hits its target.
But because it's spent lead, that is shot lead, shot out of a gun, then isn't, it seems to me it's necessarily capturing the cartridge itself.
We just don't look at it the way, Your Honor, because we really do draw a distinction between the cartridge per se and what's actually in the cartridge. We think the agency has the authority, in fact, must have the authority to look what's inside them because there are different types of cartridges and shells. No one's trying to ban cartridges or shells.
The way I'm still stuck on the legal question here. So what about, 53.61, which is the regulation, it says no taxes shall be imposed on parts or accessories of shells and cartridges when sold separately. So the way the statute works is the separation between bullets and cartridges is when the bullets are separate. If they're sold separately, they can't be taxed.
Correct, Your Honor.
Isn't that the structure of this? So that's why it seems to me that I'm having trouble with your argument that I would understand that if you said EPA can regulate bullets when sold separately, and I gather they are sold separately, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you told me that's not your position.
No, EPA can regulate bullets separately. They can regulate whatever they want as long as it has to do with what's in it.
Well,
that is what we're saying.
But you don't even have to get to what's in it to regulate bullets separately, because separately sold bullets aren't taxed, right?
Yes.
Okay. And yet your position is that the agency can go beyond that and regulate the bullets even if they're in a cartridge because of the chemicals that are in the bullets.
That is correct, Your Honor.
Okay. And just to make sure I understand, go back to the question Judge Millett asked. You're totally sure there's no factual development that could influence how this comes out?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. Okay. If you look at the plain language of Section 21 and the de novo review, I believe that is correct.
All right. Anything else?
I mean, there is. We have an alternative theory of discretion, but we firmly believe the agency has no discretion here.
So some of the exclusions in the statute, the EPA statute, have to do with substances that might be subject to other agencies' jurisdiction, you know, food and drug. Is there another agency that has primary authority here? So this is a different kind of exclusions.
No, Your Honor. And as I said, the agency regulates lead in numerous other contexts and in numerous other things. And I'm hung up on the factual issue that is in, you know, clearly before us, that there's so many other different types of bullets that don't have lead. So that's the issue of why EPA has a lot of flexibility to craft a regulation, and it would not be a ban.
What would the remedial authority be that you want exercised? Just banning the production of these bullets anywhere, or just their use in hunting?
Well, you could have general prohibitions with exceptions for the military or for police.
I'm sorry, general. So you think the appropriate remedy by the agency here would be a complete ban on the manufacture?
No, absolutely not, Your Honor. We've made it very clear we're not seeking a ban. I looked at Section 6 of the statute, mm-hmm. which is, you know, the substance of what the regulation would look like. It speaks of regulating it in certain places, regulating perhaps at certain times.
There's the forms of regulation, right? There's production, manufacture, distribution. Mm-hmm. Is that what you're targeting, or is it use?
Yes, and to be honest, we don't know what that would look like.
But given your position about the dangers of lead, I don't understand how you would be satisfied with anything short of a ban on lead.
Because we recognize, Your Honor, that there may be instances where the agency, because of Section 6, may want to phase things in.
Into an ultimately final ban on bullets?
Or some sort of more certain regulation that accepts certain entities.
I don't understand what you're saying. Your position is, and I understand, is that...
For instance, Your Honor, if you're shooting bullets that have lead at a firing range, and that firing range is fastidiously cleaning it up, making sure the lead is captured, that there's no lead pollution anywhere, and that itself is happening, that very well may be an example.
Let me modify my question. You're interested in a ban on lead bullets when used for hunting? Or
any
sort of use where there are animals?
We are interested in radically reducing the amount of lead bullets used because there are so many effective alternatives.
That kind of answer doesn't really help us with the legal issue. The questions we're asking are aimed at trying to understand exactly what you think the agency can regulate under this statute.
Well, precisely. They could certainly regulate it as a manufacturing and make sure that there are perhaps limited number of manufacturers over a course of time that produce lead, so they would have a handle on where the lead bullets are coming from. They could regulate where lead bullets are.
How would that solve the environmental problem?
Because it would reduce the amount of lead in the ecosystems, into the natural world.
I don't understand how you say that, given the exclusion, that the EPA can regulate manufacturing, since they would be regulating the manufacturer of the intact item, the cartridge, the shell, and not just the lead. I mean, what work does this exclusion do, if not say, hands off this item?
I think it says when this item is made, it cannot have this. And that's true
there isn't an exclusion for toys. There's an exclusion for paint, and paint is regulated. When you make paint, don't put lead in it. But if there was an exclusion that looked like this that said, hey, by the way, excluded from this is paint, then I take it you'd be up here arguing, oh, no, but you can regulate paint to keep hazardous substances out of it. But that seems to me to eat up the exclusion. I'm just not really sure what's left of the exclusion under your view.
Well, our position is, Your Honor, because there are so many other types of bullets that the bullets themselves would...
But you're asking EPA to regulate them. This is not an exclusion that says, by the way, do not ban bullets, just regulate them. It's an exclusion that says from the regulatory power of the agency is carved out this item. And it's not saying we'll leave it to the discretion of the EPA to do this in a way that allows, you know, hunters and law enforcement officers some leeway. It's a categorical carve-out. And the question is, what's the scope of that category?
Well, in Section 6,
that's left in your view.
I understand your question now, but better, Your Honor. And you know, going to where the bullets are used, EPA does have authority to have restrictions on place and time use of lead bullets. That doesn't mean they'd be regulating bullets per se or cartridges per se. They would be regulating the lead inside that in certain instances where there is proven damage.
Do you think the lead inside it is different from the, quote, projectile under the definition of
that? That is correct. That is absolutely our position, Your Honor.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And the one of the other exceptions under the statute is any pesticide, regulated by FIFRA. Would your reading mean then that EPA could say, well, we're not regulating the pesticide, we're just saying pesticides can't include X ingredient?
Well, that's an interesting question, but the reason that is occurs is because pesticides are regulated under a different statute.
Whereas, I'm just asking you, when Congress says the term does not include any pesticide, would the agency still have the ability to say we're just banning an ingredient that's used in pesticide?
No, I don't think they could here because FIFRA clearly occupies the field of regulation of pesticides.
That's not what Congress is accepting from the definition of things that are regulated as substances or mixtures here, these things. And it doesn't say to the extent regulated by. In fact, it's a parenthetical in that exception. So I don't understand how we could distinguish. If your position were correct with respect to bullets and shot, I don't understand what would stop the EPA from saying, we're not regulating the pesticide, we are just regulating an ingredient that's on the periodic table that happens to be in that pesticide?
Your Honor, we just think that the facts of the lead bullets is a different fact, and I see where you're going with the analogy, and I don't have an answer for it, but I think it's factually distinguishable because of the nature of lead projectiles and lead ammunition.
So what about, okay, so I get your point. I'm not saying I agree with you, but I see your point. Okay, so you're saying when you look at the definition of in the regulation, the projectile is different. It's not the same as the material that makes it up. But it also says explosive. And your position is these chemicals are bad, too, can be bad, right? The chemicals?
Only lead, Your Honor.
Pardon me?
Only lead in this instance. We wouldn't touch any of the other explosions.
Oh.
No, but hypothetically, they could be chemicals subject to EPA if some other petitioner were concerned about.
Right.
It would depend on the facts of that case.
But let's look at it just from the point of view of statutory or interpreting this. There is no difference here, whereas you could argue there's a difference between the projectile, I guess you could, and the lead that makes it up, because you could have a projectile that's made out of copper, right?
Correct.
That's not true of the explosive. Explosive is the explosive.
Right, Your Honor. I'm not sure I'm drawing the connection, Your Honor.
Well, my point is, I'm not sure if explosive can't be separated out, how you can separate out under this definition the projectile.
Before Your Honor, that lead is a substance, and I have no idea what's in that explosive. That explosive is a verb. Right.
Okay. Well, let's hear from the government then.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Yeah.
Good morning. May it please the Court, Jennifer Newman for EPA. With me at counsel's table is Jennifer Wills, who is with the Office of General Counsel for EPA, and Chris Bell, who represents the interveners. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for Mr. Bell. I know that the Court has had a lot of questions about the workings of the exclusion under TSCA for shells and cartridges, but I would like to begin my presentation today by talking a little bit about the reason that Judge Sullivan dismissed this case, which was that he viewed the 2012 submission as simply an end run around the fact that the previous petitioners had failed to timely seek review of that petition, the 2010 petition.
Well, before you describe the motives here, why don't you just look at the statute and tell me where in the statute EPA gets the authority as I read the statute, there's two requirements for a petition. It has to be filed in the principal office, and it has to set forth sufficient facts. And you don't challenge either one of those, right?
That is correct.
Okay, so where under the statute does EPA get the authority to define a petition as not a petition other than those two?
Well, Your Honor, you're correct. Statute does not define petition, nor does it explicitly give EPA the authority to interpret that term. However, in order for the statute of limitations, the 60-day statute of limitations, to have any sort of meaning, there has to be some ability to distinguish between what is a petition and
They point out, well, that's not a problem, because if someone like this one, they file this one, they didn't file in time, so they file another one, they go to court, you get a decision, that's res judicata, it's over. What's the problem?
I read that in their reply brief, and it didn't make sense to me, because the issues that were decided by Judge Sullivan in regards to the first petition was just whether that request for review was timely. Right. That doesn't really help EPA resolving whether or not the second petition gets de novo review.
But assuming that they had filed timely, I mean, we're concerned with the run of cases and how the scheme works and what the statute means in terms of petitioners' access to the agency that Congress has given them and the EPA's responsibilities in general. And in the run of cases, one of the things we have concerns about is potential repeat petitioners. And I think Judge Tatel was saying, well, if there's somebody who actually got a decision on the merits, that becomes res judicata, and there's no incentive for them to come and bring multiple harassing petitions. Here we have a situation in which, as Judge Sullivan himself commented, these people haven't had their day in court to get a decision on the merits of EPA's authority, and when is that going to happen? they've brought in, you know, it looks like most of the people, most of the organizations in the country that are interested in this question. And if they're precluded based on the fact that a couple of them participated in a proper petition, that's a very broad reading of EPA's authority to define petition. And it also seems to define person out of the statute. Every person has a right to petition, and some of the people who have petitioned in the second petition were not repeat players.
That is true, Your Honor, but I think that Judge Sullivan correctly came around to the view that you had to look at who remained the same rather than just who was different. All of those, I think 99 other petitioners, could have chosen to file their own separate petition before the agency, in which case that would be a very different case presented if you had somebody who was completely separate from the original petitioners coming to the agency with a new petition. In that case, you know, barring some other circumstance, EPA probably would have to decide that.
I don't get that as a workable test at all. If we find one person who's common between two petitions and similarity in content, we can treat it as reconsideration. I don't know what your test is for deeming something to be an unpetition.
I don't think that the court in this case needs to decide what are all the, you know, explicit conditions, you know, if these things are met.
No, we don't need to decide. We need to decide whether you guys have any workable rule or conception here, or whether this was a rule made up for one day, one way only in this particular case, and that you haven't applied any other time to anybody else.
Well, the agency has applied it before in the Walker case.
No, the Walker case said you denied the petition.
That was the third petition. Mm-hmm. The second petition that he had filed, the agency treated it exactly like
this. Okay, but the court there was reviewing your denial of the third petition, correct?
There was eventually a review of the third denial, but I think there was a separate decision looking at the second action, where the court said it's not a petition because of the same sorts of factors that EPA looked at.
By the way, even that was 1992, so that was an awfully long time ago. Are these the only two times in history that you've deemed something to be reconsideration? Because I got to believe there's overlap in people on petitions, not uncommonly.
It is the only two situations of which we are aware of the EPA treating it that way. Of course, the agency also has discretion in if it would choose to address a petition on the merits that looked like it could be a repeat player. It could go ahead and do that and use it as a vehicle to reopen its prior
decision. How are we supposed to know when you're going to do that and when you aren't? I mean, the whole point here is that Congress has said you shall grant or deny. And if you don't do anything, they still get to come to court. And if you're defining an entire category of people here that you can keep out of de novo review in district court, there has to be some consistent, workable rule that you all are applying instead of just opposed to sort of making it up every couple decades when you see something.
Well, Your Honor, respectfully, EPA is not keeping anyone out of the realm of de novo review. If the original petitioners had simply filed their petition in a timely fashion, they would have received the de novo review.
You're keeping, I think, 98 people out of de novo review that had nothing to do with that first petition.
They chose to join in with two petitioners who had already brought the same issue before the agency. The substance of the petition was largely the same if you compare the two petitions. Much of the language is exactly the same.
Let me just ask you about so I understand completely your position about statutory. The agency's position is that the position is necessary to protect the time limit for going to court, right?
Correct.
You're not arguing. If we don't agree with that, you lose, right? Because you conceded at the beginning that the agency has no, that the word petition is not ambiguous and that you don't have any, agency doesn't have any discretion to interpret, right?
Well, there's one other wrinkle that I would add to that, but in general I say that you're correct,
okay.
Which is that so Section 21 says that you can only petition under certain provisions of TSCA, and so that would be another thing.
Okay, I understand that, but that's not before us here. Mm-hmm. Sure. But the agency's whole argument turns on its perceived need to protect the integrity of the statutory time limit, right?
Correct, and to protect the agency from repeat petitions.
Yeah, no, I was really thinking the same thing, that there are other statutory purposes here. Like, clearly the statute is written to give very, very broad and hospitable conditions for petitioners. Any person can bring a petition you know, EPA has to act. As Judge Millett was pointing out, there's even something if EPA drags its feet, people get to go to court. It's very, very strongly saying, come one, come all, tell us what you perceive to be hazardous substance problems out and about in the world. We want to know. And then there's this other policy concern about limitations. And how do you square the position that EPA has taken with the concern that Congress has so clearly expressed to get broad petitions and not to say, you know, if you've done it once, then you're done?
You know, I think it's exactly the issue of you can, in fact, have that broad review. You can go to court and get the de novo review. You just have to comply with the requirement that Congress set out that you seek that review within 60 days of the denial of your petition or failure to act.
Why wouldn't, in understanding this problem of repeat players, why wouldn't the right result be to just say, well, these two, you know, people who are organizations that were here before, we're going to sort of set them aside, but we have to act because there are 98 newbies here?
I think the purpose is to prevent there from being a situation where a petitioner who failed to seek review for whatever reason of the original petition or just goes out and recruits some other people to add on.
Suppose they didn't add them onto this. Suppose they just recruited them and then they filed their own separate petition. Would you then say, well, you know, we happen to know that party number one, who was too late, went out and recruited parties two, three, and four?
EPA has never faced that situation,
but I'm trying to get you to explain what your standard is, and that's what these questions are all about.
I think that what would happen is EPA would probably look to the standards that the Supreme Court has laid out for virtual representation in the Taylor versus Sturgill case, which basically says that courts cannot treat litigants, if there are two different litigants litigating a similar issue, as virtually representing the other, unless there is some sort of circumstance like one is the agent of the other or the second litigant is really controlling the first. Do you want to go on to the merits?
Would you like to say anything about bullets?
Yes, I would.
Before you do, can I ask a procedural question? We had asked them whether there would be any purpose to have, if we were to disagree and believe that a petition had been filed here, is the right remedy for us just to decide the legal question, or is there any reason that it would be important to go back to the district court or even to the EPA, given the alternative ruling that was in the letter?
There's not a reason to go back to the district court on the legal question of does the statute give the agency the authority to regulate lead bullets and shot. That would have been reviewed de novo by this court in any event, so there's no reason that it has to go back to the district court. We don't think that there's any factual circumstances that need to be developed in the district court on that issue.
Would that be your position, too, if you knew that we didn't – I'm not saying we do, but would that be your position if we thought that we owed the agency no deference in terms of interpreting the statute?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. Okay.
I just one more factual question. Maybe this goes back to what we were talking about before. How difficult is it to publish something in the Federal Register? Is it a burdensome thing? Is that what drove this? Because you wrote a letter here. Could you have just published that in the Federal Register, or is there a lot of burden there that you feel like you need to avoid by being able to characterize petitions?
It wasn't so much the burden of publishing it in the Federal Register. It was that EPA wanted to make clear that it was not acting under its Section 21 authority to grant or deny the petition under TSCA because it didn't view it as a petition at all. Okay. And so it was attempting to be clear about what it was doing.
Okay, so how about the merits? Do you agree that EPA could regulate bullets produced and sold separately?
I do not, Your Honor. The agency does not view its authority as exactly congruent with those IRS revenue rulings and the code provisions that are cited in the briefs that we're talking about earlier. Uh-huh. And the reason for that is it seems that those decisions in the regulations about not taxing bullets that were sold separately was in an effort to avoid double taxation, which is something I know that the IRS thinks about. And that is not what Congress was thinking about whenever it was exempting ammunition from EPA regulation under TSCA. And so for that reason, EPA would take the position that it does not have the authority to regulate.
Why would there be double taxation? I mean, it's, the way I read this is if it's, if you're selling, the only reason there's any, there's a, something that's not taxed is if the bullet is sold separately from the cartridge.
Right, and my understanding would be that if you have a manufacturer who's making simply bullets, and they then sell that to someone who's assembling it into the final cartridge or shell, they don't want that to be taxed, and then the value taxed later.
Is there anything that, what leads you to think that that's what IRS was thinking about?
It's, I don't, they don't say that really explicitly, but that's the only way that it makes sense to me. I mean, why would you tax the value of the bullets and shot in whenever they're sold as part of the cartridge or shell and not tax them when they're sold separately?
Okay, I see.
What do you say to their comment that, that if, what if the bullets were made out of asbestos? Somebody suddenly said, this is a nice, cheap way to make really effective bullets. I can get the corner of the market on it. I'm going to make them out of asbestos. Would you be able to say no?
We would have no, the EPA would have no authority under TSCA to regulate the bullets that had asbestos in them. And whether or not the manufacturer of the asbestos could be regulated would turn on whether that manufacturer was intended for use in bullets and shot. In the Joint Appendix, I think it's at JA-155, there is a form that EPA requires manufacturers to fill out. And in the instructions to that form, it says that if you are making chemical substances that are normally regulated under TSCA, if they are intended for use in pesticides, in firearms, et cetera, all of the excluded things, if they're intended exclusively for that use, you do not have to report that on that form. So EPA has a long-standing interpretation that things that are intended for exclusive use in excluded articles are not regulated under TSCA.
Okay. And so you couldn't, if EPA were to determine that it just needed a complete ban on the production in commerce of lead, could it just, would you be able to just ban lead at that level, or would you have to accept lead that would be used in bullets? Could you just have a flat ban?
I think that EPA would have to accept lead that was used in bullets and also say, for example, lead used in medical devices like shields that are used for x-rays, that, you know, there are other uses that would be excluded.
I'm going to go back to your double taxation thing. What about the rest of the sentence? It says there's no tax on shells and cartridges when sold separately, okay, or when sold with a complete firearm for use as spare parts. So if I buy a gun and there are and it comes with and I buy a box of separately made bullets as spare parts, there's no risk of double taxation at all because I now own it all, right?
Right, so, but I think the concern would still be, what about the manufacturer who sold it to the person is selling it?
So I see your point. In other words, the store can't tax the spare parts.
Right.
But again, where's the – oh, you mean because – okay, so if I buy one cartridge and one bullet, right, I pay a tax – on the cartridge that has a bullet in it, right?
Correct.
But not a tax on the separate spare part bullet, right?
Right.
And what Congress wanted, and what the IRS wanted to make sure was that if I use that bullet in that cartridge for some reason, I don't have to pay tax twice?
Yeah, that's what it means? Right. And I don't pretend that it's
perfect. Does that ever
happen? I don't know.
Oh, I have no idea.
And I don't pretend that it's a perfect ruling on behalf of the IRS, because, of course, they could have said, you know, to end consumers or something,
okay.
And maybe they just didn't want to get into deciding who was.
But just, you, this is your best guess about what this means. You don't have any authority for it at all.
No.
Okay, all right. Do you have anything else?
Do you claim deference to your interpretation, since you said you're sort of departing from, or you don't feel bound by the IRS interpretation of those terms as they function in the tax code? Do you get deference, or since really all Congress said here was look over there, would we only have to give deference to the Treasury, IRS, I guess?
Our position is that EPA deserves deference for its interpretation of TSCA, including what Congress meant whenever it referenced Section 4181. And we look to the IRS code provisions, the regulations, to show support for EPA's ultimate determination, but it should be EPA's interpretation of TSCA that's really receives deference.
So that means you think it's ambiguous, so you could interpret it otherwise allow some of the kind of regulation that Mr. Sneap
is... Our position is that the statute is, in fact, unambiguous, but to the extent the court sees any ambiguity, those other provisions support our interpretation that Congress did not intend for the projectiles, the bullets and the shot, within the shells and cartridges to be regulated.
And is there any... I'm sorry, did you have something?
No, go ahead.
Is there any case that would recognize you would have discretion? You would get sort of Chevron deference when you have this sort of hybrid statutory term?
Yeah, I'm not aware of any case that would
you don't
give the deference.
Okay. Okay. Do you have anything
else? There's the intervener.
Oh.
Yeah, if Mr.
Oh, of course. Sorry.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you for reminding me.
May it please the court. My name is Chris Bell. I'm here for the National Shooting Sports Foundation, one of the interveners, and I guess speaking on behalf of the other interveners as well, since we had one counsel for the interveners. I just wanted to make a few short points on the TSCA ammunition jurisdictional point and then simply make myself available for any other questions that you might have.
Can I just start? I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I just want to ask the same procedural question. Do you see any point to, if we disagreed on the petition issue, the procedural question up front, having a district court look at this issue in the first, this interpretive issue in the first question and creating a record? I don't know if your interveners would want to put in anything, or do you think it's simply a straightforward legal issue?
I think it's a straightforward legal issue. I don't think we need it. You know, we could go back and pop back up, but I think that all the legal information that's necessary is before the court.
Do you agree with the government that this that the 53.61 that that this was designed to prevent double taxation?
I think it's in part. I agree with the government's argument about the double taxation issue. Uh-huh. Yes, I do.
Is that you must know how this works in the marketplace, right? I assume you do, right? Bullets are in fact sold separately for people who do what? Make their own cartridges? Or
yes, there are people who load their own cartridges.
Yeah.
And there are also people...
They buy them separately. They buy cartridges and bullets separately.
Yeah, they can essentially... I'm sorry, I apologize.
Oh, no, go ahead.
They can essentially fine-tune their own ammunition. And the way this is set up, and I assume it's just sort of a nod in the direction of do-it-yourselfers, is that the people who in a sense, create their own ammunition, they are not considered a manufacturer, because one of the things that's useful to look at this, the structure of the statute, is that the tax focuses on who pays it. So there's kind of two issues. There's who pays it, and then there's what you pay it on. And the who pays it is the manufacturer. And a manufacturer can be a reloader, because if I have a little operation in my basement and I'm making ammunition for my buddies, then I've become a manufacturer, and then I'm subject to the tax. Whereas if all I'm doing is I'm sort of at the do-it-yourself level, then I'm not considered a manufacturer. But in each instance, the article that is subject to the tax is that same article that's defined as being, the projectile, the container, and the propellant. And there's even a private ruling by the IRS dealing with a reloading situation, and actually distinguishes between situations where, it gets into who owns the container. Because you can, in some situations, in a sense, you can recycle the container. Obviously, the spent bullet goes out. People can collect those and all that. But the container itself, the copper or brass container, that can be reshaped, reformed, and reused. And the tax situation differs depending upon who owns it. and there's an IRS private ruling on that. So clearly the IRS gets down into the component level piece.
Okay. Do you have anything?
I'm going to show my ignorance here. Is in a lead bullet, is lead the only thing that's in a bullet, or are there other substances that are in that make up a bullet in addition to the lead?
It varies on the it can vary on the bullet, because you can have an all lead bullet. Mm-hmm. They can have jacketed bullets. In other words, it gets into all kinds of technical issues that quickly get out of my ken as well, as to the, you know, the performance of the bullet, what it does, and also what it's used for, target versus hunting, and things like that. So not all bullets are going to be, not all lead bullets are necessarily 100% lead.
What is it about lead that makes it so good for bullets? Is it the makes density? What is it about lead that makes it so good for bullets?
I think it's a combination of it's malleable, and so that's helpful from the get-go in the production of bullets, because it can it works well with the rifling of a bullet. I mean, rifling of the weapon, so that as the bullet goes out, you know, it gets the spin with the rifling, and the lead is soft enough to do that. Also, it carries weight, and also, frankly, it's just easier to work with too. I mean, dates back to the people with muskets, when they could literally make a lead ball over a fireplace.
Okay, thank you very much. Did Mr. Snape have any questions? Any time left? Pardon me? You can take 2 minutes if you'd like. Yeah.
Your Honors, I want to revisit the IRS regulation. TSCA does not concern itself with taxation. The IRS regulation is relevant only for the list of articles that can be regulated. And further, the IRS rule does not describe an exception for tax for bullets and shot. Bullets and shot are not taxed.
Well, what about her argument that they're not taxed to avoid double taxation, that that's the reason for it?
First of all, I don't think that's fact-checking, and I'm not sure it's legally relevant. Mm-hmm. We're talking about talking. Mean, what if lead paint was being shot out of a bullet? I mean, the EPA would have no authority to regulate that. I mean, there's a point where it's just this doesn't make sense. What the IRS regulation points to are the cartridges and shells, either assembled or unassembled. The bullets and shot are never taxed. They must be treated differently as it relates to TSCA regulation. That is the crux of the substance of this argument.
But would it? I guess I'm trying to figure out how that would help you, since your focus is on spent bullets and shot, which are necessarily in cartridges and shells. And so if they were to say, fine, if you have a bullet all by itself, don't drop it on the ground somewhere. But otherwise, if it's in a cartridge or a shell, we can't touch it and we won't regulate it. Would that do anything to solve your problem?
It would, Your Honor, because what's actually shot are bullets.
No, in cartridges and shells. They aren't shot without being a... I could be wrong here. I don't know a lot about this, but can you shoot one without putting it in a cartridge or shell?
Bullets can be separate. Yes, bullets are separate items.
They can be... All right.
Let me try it. Let's assume that the court does not agree with you that you can, the EPA can regulate bullets when they're in cartridges. Let's assume that we don't agree with that. That is, that there's something different between the bullet and the lead. Okay? Do you get anything out of the EPA's ability to regulate bullets that are produced separately?
Yes, Your Honor.
What does that accomplish for you?
Because it, in our view, and I think it rationally would be clear that there would be less lead in the natural world. It would reduce the amount of lead in the natural ecosystems.
But it can't be in a natural ecosystem. Your injury has been based on these injuries to birds, and your people who like the birds and want to protect the birds and want to see the birds. And if they said we could get bullets, but on that form they do, if this bullet is going to be put into a shell or cartridge, go ahead.
Yeah,
how's that going to help your birds?
I understand the distinction you're making, but the IRS rule here is only relevant to identify these articles that can be regulated. And we believe what Congress meant, and the legislative history is relevant here, is that they just didn't want EPA going after ammunition per se. And individual bullets, which are not on the list, can be regulated.
Perhaps regulating elements thereof as a backdoor way of going after ammunition per se. And that's, I mean, you see glass half full, they see glass half empty. Are any of the petitioners in this case alleging harm from lead bullets or shot other than lead shot or bullets that come out of cartridges and casings?
I'm not sure I understand the question, not that I'm aware of. I mean,
it's the same question I asked, except she asked it better.
All the harms that the petitioners complain of are harms to bullets and shot that end up in wildlife and or in the wilderness on the ground.
Correct.
That are there because they were shot out of cartridges and shells, out of guns.
No, that is not correct, Your Honor.
Oh, tell me what else didn't get there that way.
Okay, because the bullet can be sold separately.
Right, but it doesn't get to the birds and the wilderness separately. I mean, it gets separated from the cartridge in the air. The cartridge falls, the bullet flies, but it's passed through a bullet or passed through a shell.
Well, handling this also, lead also provides danger. The lead also gets into the airstream.
But yeah. Your petitioners are have a certain injury that gives them the basis of their suit, right? And that's an injury or harm to wildlife, or is it more broadly stated in your complaint?
It's broader. I'm sorry.
I'll just ask my question once more, and then we'll go on to the next case. So if we think that the government's right, that they can't regulate cartridges and shells with bullets in them, if that's off the table, then what would be left would be regulating, as one of the other lawyers said, the person in his or her basement who happens to like to buy bullets separately and assemble them for their own and then shoot them. That's who would be regulated. Is that a significant step forward for you?
It is a step forward. I'm not sure it would be a significant step forward. And, you know, Your Honor, I'd like to defer to my co-counsel just on this crucial question. I'm not sure whether that breaches.
Is there anything in the petition that suggests that this is a possibility you're even interested in?
Say that again.
Is there anything in your petition that suggests that you're even interested in this possibility? That is, of regulating bullets that are sold separately from cartridges and shells?
Absolutely, because the bullets
Separately. Sold separately.
Bullets are sold separately, Your Honor. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Okay. Not.
I just have one.
That's all we're trying to regulate are the bullets, Your Honor.
No, you're. Never mind.
Is a bullet the statute also accepts mixtures. Is a bullet a mixture? A lead bullet a mixture? Or why isn't it?
It can be a mixture, and it can have a substance in that mixture that is lead.
Right. So it would be. So that's also accepted. So even if we tried to go for the bullets individually, that would fall under the mixture exception?
No, because the substance itself, lead, is the only issue that we
but
are.
But the bullet's focused. A mixture.
No, I don't think. I think a bullet is an item. It's its own item. It's sold as its own item. It's not sold as a mixture. It's sold. You can go into a store
lead.
And buy a bullet.
He said it wasn't 100% lead.
It's not 100% lead.
Not necessarily, but it has lead in it.
Right.
Okay.
I know that. We've been on this issue, but it may be important. You said that your injury is broader than the injury caused by bullets and shot that have come out of the barrel of a gun and therefore come out of a cartridge or a shell. But isn't your complaint stated in terms of the use of lead in bullets and shot in hunting sports? That's the focus of your complaints in hunting sports, and I'm just trying to understand how that delivery mechanism could possibly operate without it being encased in a shell or cartridge.
All we're trying to regulate are bullets sold separately, whether to a hunter or to a manufacturer of cartridges, and injury to humans is relevant, too, because you handle the lead. Lead does get into the airstream, so there is a significant human health impact beyond the natural ecosystem and the birds and the other animals.
Okay, but
and that's what I meant by broader, Your Honor.
Okay, so when you say sold to manufacturers, then you do mean the entire production of cartridges and shells, then
the ultimate
cartridge.
Just
the bullets that are going into every, manufactured either in a basement or in a big company factory, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Case is submitted. Please call the next case.